because we've always been one of the smaller companies with competitors, we needed technology in order to enable that we could compete and not have as many people. And also, being a medical device company, there's just a lot of regulations about traceability and serialization. And so from day one, there was some level of technology. Obviously, we've grown, we've expanded, we've enhanced, but technology was always part of the DNA of A4D.
Welcome to the Manufacturing the Future podcast, the show designed to help you future-proof your manufacturing operations. Each episode features interviews with innovative manufacturing leaders and subject matter experts who share their insights and best practices about the technology that can empower you to streamline operations, prepare your organization for what lies ahead, and continue to keep our world turning. I'm your host, Carrie Jordan, Vice President of Product Management at Epicor. Now, for today's episode.
Hi, everyone, and thank you for listening. I'm your host, Carrie Jordan. Welcome to our show where we hear from business leaders who are transforming the future of manufacturing. Today, I'm speaking with Tammy Carter, the CEO of E4D Technologies, which is a leading contract manufacturer and design company. They're based in Richardson, Texas, in business since 2002, and they sell products globally in over 30 countries. E4D uses innovative technologies and methods like 3D scanning, as well as unique approaches to product development and manufacturing, like their unique holistic 4Ds methodology, dream, design, deliver, and delight. We'll learn more about it, as well as the technology that they use to support their commitment to manufacturing excellence. So, without further delay, let's directly dive in and discuss E4D. Tammy, thank you for joining the show.
That was fantastic. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Well, let's start by getting to know you. What has your career journey been and what led you to your current role as CEO of E4D?
As I was mentioning right before we turned on record, I think I've had a very circuitous route to being a CEO. And I think if you would have ever asked me up to probably 10 years ago, it would have never occurred to me that someday I would get the privilege of being a CEO. I actually started out as a professional musician. My first gig was when I was 15 and my mom had to drive me to work. I started as a harpist and a piano teacher and then started working for a small manufacturing company when my kids were pretty young. And I loved watching products come to life. I don't know if that was the creative part of being a musician, but watching somebody have an idea and it turn into a real tangible product, I just fell in love with it. I went from there to a very large Flextronics, now called Flex, which is global and very multi-billion dollar company all over the world. And that's an environment where if you're willing to do something, they'll let you do it. So I got to learn a lot of different things. I probably saw hundreds of products and customers all over the world, which equipped me to be a CEO someday. I started at E4D as the VP of Ops. They had been a startup, as you mentioned. And they had had R&D people trying to run operations. And if you've been in manufacturing, you know, that's both are important skill sets, but they're really different skill sets. So I was the first person to come in that actually had an ops background. So I got to take these really smart people with really cool products and bring some structure and processes to it. And then they asked me to take over the role of CEO. So I've been the CEO for 5 years.
What an incredibly accomplished background. Thank you so much for sharing that with me. And I do have to mention, I am just absolutely thrilled that you're also a harpist. And I say also because I'm also a harpist. It's more of a hobby for me now, but I am an alumni of the American Youth Harp Ensemble. It's now known as the Green Spring International Academy of Music. I absolutely loved it. I feel as though it really equipped me in my career. And I would just love to get your take on that too. I don't really get to talk to very many other harpists in manufacturing. So...
You are the first for me too. And I've been all over the world. So this is fantastic. We didn't know that before 5 minutes ago.
That's right.
I think people have asked me a lot that it seems like a very obscure transition, but I actually think there's a lot more overlap than differences. You have to have so much discipline to learn an instrument and play it well. I, like you, played with orchestras and various groups. So how do I work together with other people? What's my part in this bigger thing? I ran my own business. So it was like, I had to make sure I paid the bills and that I got paid. When you're working for yourself, how do you ask for money and make sure that you get paid fairly and pay taxes and scheduling? So all these things that might seem very unrelated actually were very transferable to when I first started working in manufacturing, because there was scheduling and there was AP and AR, and there was dealing with customers and how to deal with difficult customers and the discipline of just working hard every day. really transferred over. So I still play the harp for fun, but don't do anything professionally like I did before. Don't have enough day, but someday I might go back to that.
Yes, I feel the same way. It is so hard to pack in all of the practice that's required, let alone a full-time job and right. everything else that goes along with life. So, but yeah, I can totally see that, how it does really transfer that discipline, being able to orchestrate and working with so many others. Absolutely. So I also know that leadership and mentoring is very important to you. What is your approach or your philosophy when, as a leader, helping others in their careers?
I have always personally thought the best thing I could do was replace myself. I don't know if it's because of my experience playing music in an ensemble. I had a sister that played the violin, so we played together. But I always think it's wonderful when people become proficient enough that they can do the job you do. I think that's a real testament to leadership. So I've always felt like I can share my expertise, my experiences. That only makes the whole organization better. I especially love helping women because when I first started out a career in manufacturing, I was often the only woman sitting at the table. And there's just some things I've learned from that, good and bad. And so if I can help other women on that journey, I think that's really important. But I think maybe it even comes from being a piano teacher. I just love being able to work with people that are wanting to learn how to do something different. And it's not that I have it all figured out. Sometimes they teach me things, but in that process, you're learning and sharing together. And I think that's really very rewarding.
Absolutely. And really empowering others, it sounds like you're doing, is so important as we're looking to the next generations of leaders and helping them to really grow and, you know, achieve their own accomplishments, feel that confidence and continue to rise up. So that's wonderful. Well, on our show, we like to explore all types of technologies in manufacturing. And of course, innovative technology is really foundational to E4D. Has this focus always been inherent to who you are as an organization, or did this start at some point, and why?
It's always been part of E4D, probably for two reasons. We actually make a technology product. So we develop and manufacture a high-tech medical device. So that's sort of our DNA. But also because we've always been one of the smaller companies with competitors, we needed technology in order to enable that we could compete and not have as many people. And also being a medical device company, there's just a lot of regulations about traceability and serialization. And so from day one, there was some level of technology. Obviously, we've grown, we've expanded, we've enhanced, but technology was always part of the DNA of E4D.
Can you talk a little bit about your products, your services? I also mentioned being a design company and particularly specializing within medical technologies. Would you talk a little bit about E4D and the company?
Love to. So E4D's, it started as a medical device company and they actually had their own product. So we design and manufacture some high-tech dental equipment that is used to make restorative dentistry. We've been doing that since the beginning, and those products get private labeled and sold all over the world. So you'd never see our brand on anything, but we're out there all over the place and in your local dental office. A few years ago, partly because my background had always been in contract manufacturing, I realized we had an extraordinarily skilled manufacturing team, that our own products were a bit cyclical and they were not busy and we had capacity in our factory. So we realized we had something that was unique because we're small enough, we can take on those customers that are not ready for the really big flux companies, but they need that breadth of service. They need people who understand regulations and traceability. They need people who understand global markets and have a global supply chain. So we've been adding other customers and making their technology now for the last 5 years. So we have not only our own IP and our own products, which we private label, we have several other customers' IP and their products, which we manufacture and ship and do their logistics for them.
So I can imagine as you are, you know, being so innovative, having to change the product over time to serve your customers as they're growing and changing, new compliance regulations get introduced into the market. I can imagine that could cause potentially some change in the organization, some new technologies that you need to bring on. What are some of the challenges that you face when you realize, okay, there needs to be a change here, we need to adopt some new technology? And how do you tackle those challenges?
Two things come to mind when you ask that question. One is the word bigger picture is, what kind of culture do you have that adapts to change? We've always embraced, I mean, one of our values is that we're averse to the status quo. We realize if we're not willing to keep looking at better processes, better products, better ways, we'll fade away. And history has shown us plenty of those companies. So we have a culture that says, if this will make us better, we should embrace it. But I also think the challenge is being a medical device company, there's a lot of regulation around changing your technology if it affects how you build product. So we also have to be thoughtful about it. We can't just change for change. We have to look at it because it's quite extensive to validate another piece of technology. Not even just software, but software is just one example of tools that we have to do to be compliant. And since we're sold all over the world, we can also have to comply with every country's version of the FDA. So we really have to be thoughtful when we bring a new technology, but we would not be able to grow and scale if we weren't growing our technology too. It's just, we have to be thoughtful about when we do it, how big we do it, and be sure it's the right thing, not just the next shiny thing.
Of course. So what are some of the technologies that you've put in place today?
Early on, they put in a very robust ERP system because we needed the traceability. And that really has been the backbone of E4D. And we've upgraded that a number of times. And in fact, we need to do another upgrade. And we're sort of like, okay, it's a big thing because we have to do the validation. So what's the right timing of it? We don't do that quickly. We usually let a couple versions come out so that it's really worth the effort of upgrading, but we need to do that. But then on our R&D side, we have a whole set of tools there because we write our own software. One of the most recent tools we added was JAMA because we realized we were still doing way too much Excel spreadsheets with requirements and trying to trace paper requirements through not a very connected document system. And we started looking, we're big on lean, and you start value streaming mapping out that out and you go, oh my word, we have so much waste on how we're managing the documentation of a medical device. So we've been implementing that to just help us streamline the requirement planning through the product development cycle. But we're also looking at some other technologies in AI to help with software development because the world's changing fast. And if we want to compete, especially as a smaller company, a lot of our competitors are significantly bigger than us. So we have to use technology extraordinarily wisely, or we just don't have the manpower to compete.
Yeah. And can I ask you too, I wanted to learn a little bit more about the 4D methodology. How do you put that in place? What does it mean? How does it influence the decisions that you make as an organization?
That is our very clever way of defining the product lifecycle. Everybody has, the product lifecycle is fairly generic, but it's like, how does E4D help you and the type of customers we have? And so when we think about dream, a lot of people show up one day that have literally a dream. I've got this idea for this cool product, or I've even maybe built some prototypes, but I don't know how to get the next step done, or how do I take it from here? I don't have the expertise to create all of the documentation necessary to have it made, or even where's the best place to have it made. And we have so much expertise, not only with what we've done at E4D, but the team we have from other companies and how to take a product from literally people coming in with a sketch on a napkin. Like, I have this idea. Is this a viable product? Does it need to be a medical device? What sort of regulatory is required? So we start with that idea. It might be ours, it might be a third-party customer, but then you actually have to do the development of it. If it's a physical product, you have to create models that show what the plastics are and the metals are and create a bill of materials and what are the electronics in it. Does it need software? Does it need firmware? Creating all of that so that you can actually now go manufacture that product. So we do the whole scale. So at some point, design is done and it hands off and we manufacture it. Then the last part, the delight, is we do a lot of aftermarket support because medical devices often have requirements to repair spare parts. What's the life of the product? We even do that for some companies that we don't manufacture the product for. We've actually become their spare part logistics repair center because they're made offshore and it's not practical to send the product all the way back to Asia. So it comes into our factory. We really follow the product from the dream in someone's, on a napkin to it's been in production and now we need to support it and repair it until the product reaches the end of life.
Interesting. Do you have any technologies that you use at that last piece? I'm just thinking about the logistics and how that could be challenging. How do you manage the shipment of the solutions, helping in the field?
It's beautiful when your ERP system and your shipping system talk to each other.
Yes.
A lot of it's the ERP side. We obviously do barcoding and being able to have that ability to scan something and then be able to know what we need to do to ship it and export it, or whether it just needs to be shipped down the road, what carrier we're using. So that is a critical piece of it. We aren't a traditional 3PL. They obviously have some additional warehouse management tools that we don't have to have. Our volume isn't that high. but we stopped just short of that. So between our ERP system and our freight system, it's all very automated.
That's great. As you've been automating, as you've been bringing the ERP, the freight system, and these other tools, what have been some of the results that you've seen? I mean, I can imagine, of course, efficiencies, compliance. Can you talk a little bit about that?
I think the most important, I shouldn't say most important, everything you said is important, and it's obviously critical if we're going to sell medical devices. But I really think one of the challenges in every executive I talk to right now, and I'm sure you hear this, is manpower is getting harder. I just posted a job and I got zero resumes, zero.
Wow.
A fairly high technical job. There's not a lot of qualified candidates, but I didn't even get a bad qualified candidate applying for it.
I'm sure there's so many people who can relate to what you're saying right now.
Right. So when I look at the fact that our birth rates have been going down in the United States since, I think, something like the 70s, I read something the other day that this is the year that Gen Zers overtake boomers in the job force just because they continue to retire. I look at the unemployment rate, I go, labor is a problem. And so you have to wisely use technology to take the less skilled tasks either off the table altogether, which we always are looking for ways to try to do, or reduce the amount of effort I need a human to intervene with that so that I can save really smart people to do the work that only people can do. So we're constantly looking at that because, again, we're small, but even finding help is challenging. And so can I use technology and let the people I have do the meaningful work, the development, the coming up with new ideas, the physical transformation of the product, not running paper around or doing a piece of paper and doing a manual pick list and going and trying to find the part somewhere in a factory. So anytime that we can provide automation tools, resources for that, it just allows the people to do the people skills.
I'm going to ask, so what's next for you? You mentioned AI previously, especially considering automation and the value that AI brings for user productivity and other solutions. Can you talk a little bit about your priorities for technology in the next few years? If AI is a part of that, if something else or in addition to, where do you see this going?
I think I mentioned we are going to upgrade our ERP system. So that's going to be a big priority in the next, if not this year, next year. We're kind of doing that planning right now. When's the right time? That's going to be critical for us because currently medical devices are on a server-based platform, which is just getting less and less practical with diverse workforces. Who wants to have to do a VPN to get into an ERP system when you're working remotely? So we will go cloud-based and go to a next generation model that brings just some more efficiencies, tools, and improvements to what we have. We mentioned that we've been implementing JAMA, which is part of our development cycle with managing our documentation, but we are actively looking at how we're going to use AI specifically in our product development, in our software. There's a lot of lower level code activity that really AI can do very well now. And just like I mentioned, trying to hire and not getting one applicant, I need those people with those very high level skill sets doing that level of work and not the lower level that I can have AI do. And AI doesn't get it 100%, but even if it gets at 80% and my team only has to spend 20%, adding the final piece to it, that's 80% of effort that they can do on the more important, complicated tasks. So that is something we're doing this year. We've already been doing it a little bit, you know, enough tests to go, this is, we need to do this more, and we're rolling out on a larger scale. So that's going to be our priorities for the next probably 1 to 2 years.
Yep, absolutely. Okay, that makes a lot of sense. And I could see how that would bring a lot of value to the business to focus in those areas, especially given the industry with medical device. Medical technology manufacturing. Given your role as a leader and as a coach or a mentor, what advice do you give other manufacturing leaders out there, maybe some upcoming leaders? What guidance do you give them?
I think one of the best lessons I learned about technology was one of that very first small manufacturing company I went to work when I realized I needed to do something besides just be a full-time musician. And they were all set to put the first ERP system in, and the two owners had done some research and they were literally ready to write the big check. And in that day, it was, we still wrote checks. That's how many years ago it was. And for whatever reason, they mentioned this to their accountant, who said, have you talked to some consultant? It's like, I really think before you spend this money, since you've never done this before, you might want to just talk to this guy. And I remember being invited into the meeting and he probably asked us 5 questions and we all realized like, we don't know what we're doing. And what we realized is we couldn't really explain our processes. He asked us a very simple question, like, draw out your current process. And we were relatively small. We all just kind of knew what we were doing, but we had never documented one process. And he goes, why are you automating something that you haven't even proven you have the right process? And it was a bit embarrassing. But oh my gosh, that turned out to be the best advice. And I have done multiple ERP implementations over my career. I even did a beta test one time for someone, which was super fun. I got to literally use every module in the software, which was very helpful in learning. But I realized that if you don't have clarity in your own processes, don't just automate to automate. You want to be sure that you've thought through what the most important thing is, and then you automate that. I think the other thing is understand your customers and the industry you're in. I've watched people put in software because they fell in love with what they thought it was, but they never considered if it would meet their customers' needs. What does your customer need from you? They usually want some interface with your technology. Did you consider what they're going to expect? If you're a medical device or there's other regulatory, if you're doing defense work, have you considered what those requirements are, and is this tool going to meet it? So just taking that step back, not to not engage the technology, but be sure you're engaging the technology in the right way and you've picked the right technology. But I think the most important is culture. You and I were just talking about that. If you don't have a culture where your team is used to change, you've got to think through how you get them on board, because if they don't see technology as making their job better, they're not going to purposely resist it, but they're not going to embrace it. And you're going to potentially have a failed implementation because you don't have the team on board. So really understanding the change management of who on your team are influencers and get them on board. Because if they see how it makes the company better, them better, well, now you have a whole group of people advocating for whatever new technology you're bringing.
Absolutely. It is so important to make sure you have the right team in place, and excellent advice. And thank you for sharing that story. I can imagine being in that position and having those questions asked of you and not being able to map out the process. That's great advice. I think we all need to make sure that we can really map out the processes before we approach automation.
And I think for small companies, your question, or new, you know it so well in your own head that it's super obvious to you. But if you're going to scale the company, and are you even doing it the best way? Because you're just doing it what works for you. It's important to realize that, because just because it works for you doesn't mean it's scalable and doesn't mean it transfers to technology well. And I think that was the lesson, is we were running a very efficient business, but it was in three people's heads, right? How do you scale that and how do you automate that? Just because we found a way to work with three people doesn't mean it's going to work with 10 people. And that was really the lesson there, is we were doing fine. That doesn't mean we were going to do fine as we grew. And I think that's what any new company has to think through, is just because it works now, can you make that work if you have twice as many people or three times as many people or twice as many customers? And usually that's when you realize it's not scalable.
Right, of course. Well, Tammy, this has been wonderful. I'm so, so glad to have this opportunity to talk with you. If anybody listening wants to learn more about you or about E4D Technologies, where would you send them?
Well, our website, which is just e4d.com. I'm on LinkedIn. I'd love to connect with people. And then if you want to learn a little bit about how I do coaching, I do on the side coach executive women. So I have my own website, which is tammycarter.com with an I, T-A-M-M-I. My parents had to be just a little different than everyone else.
I understand. With the Carrie, K-E-R-I-E,
yes.
It's a little different.
And I'm so delighted to meet another harpist. It was fantastic.
Yes.
We only have a conversation about manufacturing and technology, but talk to someone else who's passionate about music.
Yes, this has been incredible. Thank you so much. Well, we'll include those links in the show notes for anybody who wants to get in touch with you. Thank you so much. And Tammy, this has been a great conversation. Thank you.
Have a great day.
All right. Thank you so much to my guest. That was Tammy Carter, CEO of E4D Technologies, a leading contract manufacturer and design company. And to everyone listening in, thank you for being a part of the future of manufacturing.
Thank you for listening to Manufacturing the Future, brought to you by Epicor. For the latest episodes, search for the show on your podcast platform of choice. Make sure to subscribe to get notified when a new episode is released. To learn more about Epicor, visit epicor.com.